Thank you very much for the invitation. It's very nice to be here again. I think it's almost exactly 2 years since the last time I came here and gave a talk. It's going to be quite a similar kind of thing. So this, I'm going to talk about these two papers, one of which I did with Luca and Carlisa. And this is related to particle production phenomena in atomic double field theories, by which I mean the Hawking and radiation and these kind of things. So I'm going to separate the talk in two very different parts. First, I will give an introduction and motivation. First part is going to be quite long and very qualitative and very hand-waving, if you want. So please forgive. But I promise to be a bit more precise in what I say in the second part. Let's go ahead with some motivation. Why should I care of considering the particle production phenomena that can happen in non-trivial gravitational fields? That's already interesting by itself. We don't need even to put a strongly coupled theory, which is also interesting by itself, to mess up the thing. The point is that there are some situations where these things actually are both important. They both appear. Most clear example is if LHC is going to produce any black holes, many black holes are going to be more likely with a high temperature, well above the QCD scale, and so for that you need to have a handle on what how is the evaporation into these modes going. First, you expect to evaporation to go into gluons and quarks, whatever, and then this eventually hadronizes. This is complicated, and so this is the kind of situation I want to discuss. So as I'm saying, the picture that you have in mind is that, so like saying in a theory like QCD, where you have a mass gap, you don't expect to receive any Hawking radiation at all if the temperature of, if the black hole is large enough, if the temperature is below this gap. And so this, if you want, is a very trivial example of a situation where a strongly coupled nature of the theory shuts down the radiation, the gravitational particle production, simply because the actual degrees of freedom rearrange into massive ones and you are not with a high enough temperature. Okay, so that's very simple. Thing, but the actual non-trivial situation is what happens then when the temperature is larger than the mass gap. Still at infinity, you shouldn't see any quarkic gluons, but you can have some region where you have the radiation actually proceeds into this degree of freedom and then hadronizes. Okay, so this is more or less the situation. There is another system actually where this thing is also relevant, which is for these primordial black holes. It turns out that these are the black holes that will be in the final stages of the evaporation right now. And if you do the numbers, these at the beginning of the, in the early universe, have a temperature just around lambda QCD, so this is also relevant for these guys. Okay, so the main point of this talk is going to be whether we can learn anything for this type of black holes, say, from ADS-CFT.
Probably just a small, tiny, itty-bitty qualification is that the fact that the theory, I think you're right, the fact that the theory shuts off the radiation has nothing to do with the black hole, or for that matter, in some sense, even the strong coupling. It's just the fact that the vacuum at infinity is the confining vacuum period.
Yeah. I agree, but so if you take the theory face value and truncate the
theory in V coupling doesn't have confining phase. Okay, so That's
Of course, I mean, there's always a way.
I mean, like I said, tiny bit, you know, trivial point. It's really the boundary conditions of infinity, if you like, that define the confining vacuum that tell you that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Sure. So, all right, then, there is this related issue connected with this, which was raised by Heckler quite a long time ago, and which goes under the name of photosphere, or if we are talking about QCD, chromosphere, which is supposed to be a sphere surrounding the black hole where a plasma of a QED or a QCD plasma could be formed, and this plasma would be in principle in equilibrium with the radiation that comes from the black hole. So Heckler did some estimates, and so his logic was that, okay, so you take a small black hole with a high enough temperature. If the temperature is high enough, the flux is going to be eventually large enough, and so that the interactions between, so you can think that the density of particles created are is large enough so that the interactions between particles, even in QED, okay? So for a second, let's switch to QED. The interactions are going to be such that maybe they are relevant, and of course the point here is that you could have these Bremsstrahlung processes where you have this 2 to 3 body scattering. And the point is that because you have more particles after the scattering, the energy has to be redistributed. The energy per particle is lower. And so if this happens at an enough efficiency, you're going to decrease the temperature or the average energy of the spectrum. And even in principle, you could produce this like plasma that could be surrounding the black hole. Okay, so I don't want to enter too much into details of this, where do these estimates come from, of where this shell of plasma, what's the size associated to it, because actually this...
Is this assuming that this thing is being held there, or is it supposed to be supported by this?
This is supported by... So this is self-consistent.
It doesn't fall in because of the output.
It does. It's supposed not to fall in, and the point is that this is going to be supported by the flux of photons and electrons and positrons that come out from the black hole itself, and then at some scale, all because this you are losing energy per particle, this eventually electron positron pairs annihilate, and what you're left with is only photons. After this, say plasma, and of course the spectrum is going to be modified. It's not necessarily even thermal. Okay, so that's kind of considerable modification to the actual picture if it's true.
So what is the observer outside the shell? I mean, could they know that there's a black hole in the middle even?
Well, that's another issue. Yeah. It could. You wouldn't readily. You would see just a light coming from a shell like in the sun.
Like
that's
star,
what right. Like
so I wouldn't even know that.
Exactly. But well, I guess you would notice. The size is much more. The size of this would be because this wouldn't happen.
He was arguing that only for hot black holes, right? Not for the
right. This is supposed to happen for very small black holes. Okay, very high temperature.
Wouldn't I expect the temperature to be thermal, the spectrum to be thermal, but with a different temperature if I've got lots of interactions of these photons that are being released from?
Well, the actual thing is that this is a quasi-thermal plasma, it's not really thermal, and the point is that you have lots of electron positrons that get annihilated, so the point is, so if this was a at any layer it was thermalized, then the spectrum of the photons at infinity will have a peak at the electron mass, which differs completely with the thermal. I mean, it has nothing to do with the actual temperature of the black hole.
Okay.
It's actually not peaked at that energy, but whatever. So this was the picture. I don't want to enter into the details because this was criticized quite a bit, and I mean even quite recently, mostly by Page, Karen McGibbon. So the question, the point is, okay, this is just I just mentioned this as a possibility, and I will try to argue this thing will resuscitate in this ABS-CFT perspective. Okay, so I think there's no need to say much about ABS-CFT. What I just want to say a little bit about is a little bit modified version of it, which is what I need to attack this problem, because in this problem I have both the black hole and the Stokely coupled theory. I use ABS-CFT as a handle for the strongly coupled theory, but I need to have gravity also in it, and that's not the standard version of ABS-CFT. In this, in order to have gravity coupled to this, you need to put a brain in the five-dimensional picture. That's so the point is that four-dimensional gravity coupled to this QCD-like theory is dual to the Randolph syndrome, the brain world model, very well-known thing. The level of equations, the matching conditions of the brain, of the Randolph syndrome brain, is completely dual to the semi-classical Einstein equations, where I'm including the back reaction of this conformal theory, this presumed QCD theory here. Okay, so that's very important. That's actually the most important content of what this cutoff ABS-CFT means, and was realized quite by people here after a few years after ABS-CFT. So the point is that whenever you find solutions, five-dimensional solutions with localized matter on this Randolph syndrome brain, this is dual to four-dimensional geometry, where the quantum effects from this CFT is already incorporated. Okay, and this is what we're looking after. Okay, now this is just a quick slide about the checks of this thing. I mean, this is to say that this is also not as well established, but a bit there's evidence for this. About Randolph syndrome, I just want to say that this is when you have another brain, what's called the TV brain or IR brain, then this theory is dual to Technicolor that breaks conformal invariance in the infrared and provides you a theory with a scale with a mass gap, something very much like QCD. Okay, so now the point is there is a little tension between two of the ingredients of this correspondence, and one of them is that the CFT is in the large n limit, so a large number of covers. So if this was the story alone, then it would be very clear. Having a large number of fields enhances by a factor n squared the back reaction of these fields on the metric. So on the four-dimensional side, you don't expect to even have any four-dimensional static black hole, because this has to include already the back reaction, and that's this gives you time-dependent geometry. And so, by correspondence, you wouldn't expect five-dimensional localized static black holes in this Randolph syndrome. Okay, now the problem of this is that actually this the field theory is strongly coupled, and this may affect the actual number of degrees of freedom. So this back reaction may be not so important, and so maybe there are actually static solutions. So there is sort of a debate on this. It's not actually clear at all.
Sorry, can I just conceptual question? Why is it important the large n factor important for the first argument? I would have thought that just whether or not that factor is there, you expect black holes to radiate. So if the solution includes quantum corrections, you wouldn't expect static black holes.
Right, no, this is important because the correspondence holds a leading order in N, in one over N expansion. So if the amount of radiation is of order N squared, you're going to see it. If the amount of radiation is of order...
If it was small in 1 over N, I guess I could worry that it's not there or something. But as long as it doesn't go away in the large N limit...
Right, but
the enhancement isn't... I mean, if I... As long as it's an effect that I can see, it's big enough to see in the large N limit.
Maybe I'm not saying this right. So if what you are radiating is a confined state, these are color singlets, and the degeneracy of these states does not scale like N. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So the back reaction is of order 1, and then it's not so clear, at least, that time dependence should...
Why is it clear? If it's order 1, then it's order 1, and then you should expect to see a static black hole once that's included.
Because perhaps of order 1 and order 0 is the same. If the leading term that you expect is order N squared, it's not clear that order 1 or even distinguish between order 1 or 0. I don't know, this is very... So, if you ask me, I think this is not... I agree with you, and I think this is not even a strong enough argument, and even if the degrees of freedom that we radiate away are confined, it should be non-static. But it's not completely... It's not crystal clear either. In any case, so...
The criticism was mostly based on the fact that the statement, based on the emission of n squared degrees of freedom was done using, extending weak coupling estimates without taking into account any possibility for corrections of the number of layers. That was all.
Well, I'd just be curious. I mean, I just want to understand, what is, if somebody wants to claim that, no, there should be a static solution... I just want to understand why they claim to be compatible with the fact that you included the back reaction.
The claim was very tricky because the main evidence in that claim was the existence of a certain exact black string solution, Warp Schwarzschild black hole, that was cut by a TV brain. And then the trouble with that, if you actually look at the, there is 1,000 ways to shoot that argument, basically. But the main problem with that configuration that was being used as and touted as the example of a static black hole is that actually had similarities.
Any specific example? This general argument just says that you don't expect to find any because black holes are evaporating.
Of course,
but none has been found, so there seems to be some basic consistency.
Of course.
Yeah. On the other hand, the establishment of the cutoff ADSC correspondence is not so strong.
Yeah, I can see that.
So if you question that, there is. Hmm?
Yeah, I can see that proving that there are no static black holes might be very difficult.
Yeah. But okay, yeah. So this criticism was a bit to the whole of the picture and to both and. To whether these static black holes exist, so it questions whether the cutoff ADSC CFT correspondence is true also in a part. My perspective.
That's okay. Why don't you go?
So
on?
Yeah,
Marcus, what they basically did in trying to argue that there are suppressions is that they were ignoring the effects of gravity, which are so crystal clear to you. Namely, that if you go to free fall and use the inertial reference frames, you will see no source for any suppression and any loss of degrees of freedom.
Okay, why don't we go?
Yeah.
I suspect this is not really important to you. So.
Oh, okay, yeah, don't. Then, in any case, there is just one, and only one known exact solution representing a black hole, which represents a black hole also in four dimensions, which is this warped uniform black string, which is just substituting the usual Randolph Sundin space where you have the 4D Schwarzschild metric in the 4D sections. This turns out to be a solution. And the point is that as any black string, this displays an instability, which happens if it's too long. Okay, so if the two brains are close enough, this is going to be stable, and this translates into when the horizon radius on the UV brain is larger than this lambda QCD scale, the mass gap, then the temperature of this then this black string is stable, and this has a very clean dual interpretation, which is that okay, then you are at a temperature below, so radius is large, the temperature is below lambda QCD, you cannot produce even a single globule. And of course, this doesn't decay into anything, and you should have indeed the fortimatic to be exactly Schwarzschild. Okay, there's a little question on then what happens with when the so this is this is wrong when the temperature is higher. Okay, so one part of the question is that this is still a solution. Even though it's unstable, okay. So this kind of puzzling for the dimensional point of view, because it seems to suggest that there is some state of the CFT in which there is no radiation, but which is tachyonic or unstable in some sense. This is a bit hard to figure out what kind of state. I mean, according to our intuition, that shouldn't be a vacuum. But anyway, let's explore it a bit more. So I'm saying that this is the one possible realization of what can happen for this small radius black string is that as suggested by Ray Lofan instability, that the black string breaks, forms drops, droplets, small black holes, that then, because of the anti-de-Sitter, would run down to the IR brain. And okay, this is not even clear, I mean, in the five-dimensional picture. But so first question that you would try to ask is, oh, is this the five-dimensional classical picture of Hawking radiation, actually? Because here I have a four-dimensional black hole that is losing mass. Okay, once the radius is small enough, somewhere in the bulk, the drops are forming. This is I'm losing mass, and okay, that would be a very nice picture. But probably it is not really what's happening, because as I said, this is the Gregory-Lefan instability is an instability, whereas the Hawking radiation is a spontaneous decay. It's not a tachyonic mode anywhere, right? So perhaps what's actually happening is more interesting and has to do with the fact that in this regime, we are at the exploring precisely when the temperatures are above the lambda QCD. So now, let me just give you my personal opinion or collection of opinions from other people also on what could happen. This is, I insist, very pictorial and not very strict, but just let me say it. So once you have a particle that goes down into ABS, this is perceived in the from the point of view of four dimensions as a shell of CFT plasma that expands to infinity. Okay, so once the Gregory-Lefan sets in and you start forming droplets, you would be producing a shell of CFT plasma that expands.
Why is it a shell instead of a ball?
Yeah, this is really something I'd like to see myself sometime. but I don't really know. I think this is because so this particle very quickly approaches the speed of light, going down to the radius. And what you are seeing essentially is like the shock wave, and this defines a light cone. And what you're seeing is the projection of this light cone on the plane. And I think this is the reason why this is an expanding shell. But I'm not sure. Yeah, in any case. So then, eventually, this droplet reaches the other brain. The other brain is where the conformal signal is broken spontaneously, where hadronization should happen. Okay, this CFT shell presumably has its local temperature below. This is where the local temperature reaches below adiabaticity and hadronizes. And then, so this is, of course, after the black hole has collided with the other brain, it stays there in the 5D picture, but it has displaced the radial, the location of the other brain. So this produces a wave of radion, which we would call a radio wave, and also, of course, gravitational waves, right? Now, this is what I mean here is five-dimensional gravitational waves, because by spherical symmetry, you know that you shouldn't excite the graviton to the amount. So all of these are five-dimensional gravity waves, which correspond here to blue holes, okay? The sort of measurement of this thing. Now, and this is really finally energy that's going to infinity with some sort of spectrum, and is, if I understand well, is what's really dual to the actual Hawking radiation that you would be getting in the end of the day in this situation. Okay, so there is so this sort of picture. Let me just repeat it. You form these globules that go to infinity and go together with a wave of the radion of the Goldstone boson here of the associated to the breaking of conformal symmetry. And what else? Right, there are some little estimates that you can make associated to this, which is what's the energy, the mass lost by this process, by this radial flamme instability. And this is something pointed out by Takahiro Tanaka. This coincides precisely with having a mass loss given by having n squared fields. Okay, so this presumably then is transferred into these five-dimensional gravity waves, into the resonances, and finally removes part of the mass of the initial black hole. So I didn't say that this you should be left with some plasma ball, because in the 5D picture this black hole doesn't evaporate at all. It simply it loses some mass into gravitational waves, but and this is, of course, the radiation. Yeah.
I don't understand why you say that this is not Hawking radiation. Let me push on that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you start with a situation where lambda is big enough, okay, that you don't radiate, okay, so that means that or the black hole is small enough, you shouldn't radiate. That configuration is stable, and a 4D observer, living on the Planck brain, would just see that like a black hole. It has a horizon, right? Everything
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
Now I could imagine just lowering lambda. So I could imagine a solution where lambda has some potential and is moving slowly. And then as lambda gets smaller, the 4D observer would say, oh yes, now here comes Hawking radiation, because now it's kinematically accessible, right? My hadrons are light enough to be radiated. And then this thing, which looks exactly like a black hole, radiates. It decays. So why don't you call that Hawking radiation? Why wouldn't you say that this is just the dual description of Hawking radiation?
I'm not sure I understood what you have in mind. So would you say when the temperature gets above lambda?
So I'm assuming that I'm not changing the temperature, I'm just moving lambda.
Okay,
right?
Yeah.
So I'm lowering lambda, because I don't know how to lower the temperature of the black hole. Let me just
okay.
Lower lambda, right? So sorry, raise the temperature of a black hole that's stable. I don't know how to raise its temperature, right? So I'm going to lower lambda, which is something
yes.
I can, in principle, arrange to do.
Yeah.
You know, if I have the right sort of potential that's controlling.
Yeah. So that eventually you can evaporate somebody.
So I'm just saying, why isn't this then just some? It doesn't look like Hawking radiation because back reaction is.
Yeah, I see. So by making the other brain go away.
The state starts off with being like a black hole, which is kinematically stable. It has nothing to decay
yes.
into.
Yes. No. Yeah. The only
exactly when you
right.
expect Hawking radiation to start, this process happens.
Yeah. Yeah. So the reason why I said that was not Hawking radiation is because that was associated to an instability. Usually Hawking radiation isn't an instability. It's not a tachyon. It's right.
But you're comparing things, dual things to each other. So it's a little bit of a difficult compare. I know
right,
what
no.
you want
so
to say.
So what I want to say is to put this the other way around and say that this is something that is more interesting. And the point is that, so what goes tachyonic is one of these spin two resonances of the CFT.
Are you sure there's really a difference? I mean, quantum mechanically,
right.
classically, there's definitely a difference between a tachyon
right.
and an instability, because you can, in principle, sit at the top of the potential forever.
Right.
But in quantum mechanics, you can't. Right.
Right.
So are you sure that there's really a physical
right.
difference?
No, I'm not sure. I'm just playing devil's advocate. I don't actually myself think it's a big deal. But I just admit that there is a difference, and that when the temperature is higher than lambda, there are
let me play devil's advocate to your devil's advocate to support Marcus's point of view in
okay.
a slightly different way. Which is that in these two calculations you have very different assumptions to start with. Hawking radiation, in a certain sense, is, you know, there is an order of limits which is presumed, which is that you have a black hole, then you have a system internal equilibrium, that have a lot of, you know, you've basically gone far out after it all quote unquote started. The difference in the, I think that the difference with the Gregory Laflamme sort of setup is different order of limits. Namely, you assume that you can make this thin string, then you look at it and, you know, as he says correctly, that sounds like a particle sitting on the potential well, but you prepared it and then you look, you calculate small perturbations and you find that it's tachyonic. The thing is, I think with Hawking radiation you simply are never at the position where you can even consider what the particle initially sits on, because of the assumed order of limits. But having said that, you know, I know what you're saying. You're basically saying that with the calculations that you know how to do, they look different.
Yeah. So
it's just that those calculations have limited
right. Right. First of all, so you can say, yeah. Oh, come on. So this picture, first of all, how do you get to this kind of, there's no guarantee that by colliding two particles you're going to get a black hole, I guess. Let me include first order quantum effects in the gravity picture, which is something doing something else also on the CFT. Maybe it's not so, I don't know, I don't have it so much under control, but then you could start with the uniform black string, let it evaporate a bit until you get here. Then eventually I imagine that you could prepare one system. So in the end of the day, the only point I want to make about precisely this kind of configuration is that this Gregory Laflamme instability tells you that okay, there is this instability, but this is not the most relevant thing. Most relevant point is that the evaporation let's call it evaporation, I agree. At this level, when you produce shells of plasma, comes in bursts. That's what I think is the message here. Maybe it's too hand-wavy. Of course, this is very hand-wavy. But I think this is what this is telling you. Then, so you produce one drop. This is one burst of CFT that goes to infinity, tries to, until the temperature is low enough that then it hadronizes. But this hadronization is going to come in bursts, because you are going to receive little droplets like this, one by one. So that's all I want to say. And of course, in the end of the day, so what's the end result of this? You are going to be left with a plasma ball at the center, because the black hole doesn't disappear in the 5D picture, or at least significantly, and with waves of globules and goldstones. Okay, this is what I think this picture suggests. Maybe it's too much a stretch, but anyway. So that I think is a very nice picture, and we should maybe think harder about it. So there is a there's another setup which makes the there's a little more criticism going around, which has to do with the Cash-Randall model, which is when in the CFT you have also a negative cosmological constant. So the dual picture of the Cash-Randall, I'll be very simplistic and take only two extreme possibilities. One possibility is when I have only one brain, so this is the 5, so this is my four-dimensional anti-de-Sitter for brain, and then so this should be dual to having one CFT, which is the one we are sort of coupled to. But this the boundary conditions at the ADS4 boundary for this CFT are non-trivial, and there are these called transparent boundary conditions, in which essentially energy can flow into another CFT, which is supposed to be in its ground state. Okay. So, and one nice feature about this model is that the graviton is massive, and is something that you can also see in the dual picture. Because and arises because of the transparent boundary conditions. The other extreme is when you have actually in the bulk two brains and with a Z2 symmetry across the bulk. So this is a sort of dual to the having the CFT with reflecting boundary conditions, which I can translate in the previous language by saying that the other CFT is identical to the one we had. Okay, and in this model the graviton is massless. Okay, so now let's see what happens with the black holes in this case. It turns out that there is also a warped uniform black string, a Schwarzschild anti-de-Sitter one, which looks like that. Okay, so if this was anti-de-Sitter, then the horizon would do something like this. And so for the transparent boundary condition case, the one brain, then so it's obvious that the asymptotics of this the five-dimensional bulk is not asymptotically even locally anti-de-Sitter 5. So I think this is not a relevant state. Or in other words, you would be having to put the other CFT in a completely crazy state, in a state that imitates having a black hole with essentially the same mass. And so that's far from having the CFT prime in the ground state. So I'm saying this because this warped string in this case is known to be stable. So there is not so much there is not much issue about whether this there is a radiation or not. Simply there is no radiation. In this case, but so for this boundary conditions, I think this is completely irrelevant. The actually asymptotically anti-de-Sitter black hole solution should be something very different from that, and then it would be with a thermal component. Okay. Now there is another. So for the reflecting boundary conditions, the story is quite different, because now I don't have an asymptotic anti-de-Sitter region. So this solution is actually allowed, and it's stable. So it's in principle it's not clear that this could be the relevant state describing the CFT in equilibrium with a black hole. And if this were so, because this is a Schwarzschild anti-de-Sitter for slices, there would be no thermal component. But this is in clear contradiction with any one loop or weak coupling computation that you do, where you see some hot radiation. And so this leads you to, or more specifically, Gregory, Ross, and Jaggers, to conclude that there is a puzzle, and or that it seems that at strong coupling, or because of strong coupling, the Hawking radiation, which is in this case is a stationary thing, that's why I prefer to call it the thermal component of the suspensor, is shut down by no perturbative effects in the CFT. Okay, and this is based on the fact that the solution is actually stable. Yeah, fine. I understand. I agree. So it's true. This is a. This is a good observation, but nothing guarantees that there isn't another a black hole solution with the same symmetries that has less free energy, and so is more stable. In other words, it could well be that this solution is stable but metastable. In this case, there would be no puzzle, and so this solution would not represent the vacuum. Would represent again some weird excited state where you somehow are canceling the radiation. But again, I cannot give any concrete evidence for that, because this is a very tough problem. So I decided to turn to easier problems, and this is the particle creation by moving mirrors. The only trick that makes this easier is that two things. First, realizing that a domain wall is actually a physical implementation of an accelerating mirror. Once you take its gravitational field into account, a domain wall has associated with a gravitational acceleration scale. It repels test particles in proportion to the tension. And the other observation is that, well, because of this kind of object, you can impose to have more symmetry than just a spherical. And you can impose that the world sheet of the domain wall is maximally symmetric. And this, of course, helps a lot. Now, I have to be very fast. It's convenient to put this domain wall in anti-de-Sitter also, and for dimensional anti-de-Sitter. And then it happens that there is a critical value of the acceleration when this coincides with the anti-de-Sitter curvature, where things change considerably. And the change is that, so this four-dimensional metric that describes the maximally symmetric and the Z2 symmetric domain wall is simply by that, is parameterized by world factor. It's like a one-dimensionless version of brain world. And so for subcritical tension, when tension is small enough, this world factor has no zero, there is no horizon, and when the tension is critical or supercritical, there is a horizon at either infinite or finite distance. So this turns out to be relevant because you can fix by only the maximal symmetry, maximal symmetry of the background and the properties of the CFT, which is conformality. The stress full expectation value of stress tensor has to take this form. It has to be maximally symmetric in these three longitudinal directions. It has to be traceless. Then, by conservation, it has to decay like 1 over the world factor to the fourth. And then you're left with an integration constant, a constant that has to be computed. And that translates in this problem to a Casimir energy. Okay? So it depends on the boundary conditions. Now, whenever you have a horizon, like for the critical or supercritical case here, then this immediately tells you that either P is this cosmic energy is zero, or you have a singularity. So if you don't want a singular vacuum state, the stress tensor simply is zero, and there is no particle creation, there's no radiation. But if for subcritical worlds there is no horizon here, and you can have a non-zero stress tensor, and you do. And the picture you have is something like this. Here is the domain wall, this is the wall factor, and at around the bounds present in this ADS4, locally ADS4 geometry here, the radiation, the expectation value of stress tensor peaks like exponential, okay, because this depends exponential. And so you have two sort of plasma walls in equilibrium with your moving mirror. Okay, now let's briefly see how to compute this Casimir energy. In this case, where it is not zero. So the point is, the conformal structure of this space is that of an interval of a finite distance, a finite length I call delta eta, eta is conformal distance, times antecedent 3. The distance of the conformal distance is determined by the amount of tension of the domain wall. And so this is a very simple Casimir energy computation. Now, the boundary conditions that I want to impose for these are the ones relevant for Cash-Randall. And Cash-Randall, you have the CFT which transmits to the other one. So this is equivalent to substituting essentially your interval by a circle that's made by the union of two intervals, okay? The one where CFT lives and the one where the CFT prime lives. Okay, and the length of this S1 is simply the sum of these two intervals. Now, our interval depends on sigma, but if we choose the CFT prime to be in ground state, this has to be pi, because this is what you have when there is no domain wall, when it's conformal to plane antecedent 4. Okay, so this is the choice that you should do. For transparent boundary conditions, you choose the delta eta equal to pi. And for reflecting boundary conditions, these two guys have to be the same, so they're the same. Now, computing at one loop this Casimir energy is very easy, and gives something like this. It's something that, of course, when there is no domain wall, vanishes. And it's a bit different for the two boundary conditions. Now, this is not important. What I want to do now is to do the strong coupling computation of this Casimir energy. Okay, so now I'm going to do a completely standard ADS CFT computation. Here, there are no brains, no nothing. This is just I have a CFT defined on this background. What do I have to do to compute the vacuum expectation value of T mu here? Just finding an ADS5 geometry with this boundary. Okay. Well, these geometries go under the name of the hyperbolic ADS solitons, and are simply analytic continuations of topological black holes, and are characterized by this integration constant mu, which is going to be dual to the Casimir energy, of course.
This Horowitz and Myers paper, is that the one? That
yeah, this is so the ADS soliton is this thing for coupling to zero.
Okay.
This I call hyperbolic because the slices are
okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, so there's a very well defined prescription for computing what's the energy of this solution, ADS solution, which is identified with the expectation value of the CFT in this background. Now, one thing that I have to say is that in order for this solution to be a completely regular gravity solution, you have to choose this this angle, which is sort of the analytic continuation of what was time in the black hole, with an appropriate range, that depends on this on this interaction constant. Note that so this is the distance or the length of the S1. This is what is related to Casimir energy. If you invert the relation, you get the Casimir energy as a function of the length. And this is the answer. Okay, it's some weird expression. And the point is, so this was at one loop, and what we need is to compare the two. And this is the ratio, okay? The ratio of the expression at non-perturbative level divided by at one loop. This is this line, okay? And this close is of order one, and is at most the discrepancy is this famous three-quarter factor, okay? But it can be much less. All right. So this is then. So a conclusion is that remember that what this gives us is the expression of the Casimir energy at strong coupling when this the CFT is strongly interacting. Okay. And okay. Well, we see that it's not by far. It's not suppressed as respect as compared to the one loop level. Is they are both of order n squared, and they are a little bit different. Nobody suspected they were going to be the same. but the important thing is that there's no suppression. And the other important thing is that we also expected that there not being any suppression, because this is a plain any Wolf force superior than mu in a compact space. And you don't expect any that the theory at strong coupling behaves is a confining. So indeed, you should see the two results to be of order n squared. Okay, so this is all right. And note that this is true even though this system is this accelerating mirror, subcritical accelerating mirror in anti de Sitter, is a zero temperature system, okay. So that if this theory had been in a confining phase in this space, then it would have shown up, because this is at zero temperature. I mean, we would be probing the confining phase in principle, but it's not, okay. so now I think I don't have much time. There are a few not so interesting topics. Which this I have already more or less said, that the relation between the boundary conditions on the not really I haven't said that. So now the point about the cutoff ADS CFT correspondence is that we could also include the back reaction from this stress tensor. All right. So, and this leads to the number of questions. In this case, in the Karsh Randall model, because there is this massive gravity behavior depending on the boundary conditions, you can really see that depending on whether you choose transparent or reflective boundary conditions, you get a screening of the domain wall tension or not. Okay, actually, to tell the truth, in both cases you get screening. Okay, so I will summarize very quickly on this, because the screening comes from the plasma wall, from the Casimir energy that you are generating, and in both cases you have. It's by a different amount, but you have. So there, at least for this case, there is a screening, but the good news is that there is more screening, and it is, in the sense, it's more negative. The tension is, effective tension at infinity is more negative for transparent boundary conditions, which is when the graviton is massive. Okay, so at least this minimal check we pass. So we expect this the graviton to be massive there, and indeed we get more screening. Okay. I don't know what to skip and what to keep. So I will skip everything. And if you want, yeah. So let me just comment on this, and that will be the last thing. So, yeah. So, okay. So what we learned out of this is that domain walls in anti-de-Sitter produce particles, and when the tension is small enough, but whatever. And there's not much difference between strong and weak coupling, whatever. But the point is that there is particle creation with something accelerating on the brain. Now, there is, of course, a five-dimensional dual phenomenon to this particle creation by domain walls. And this is the fact that whenever you have a codimension two object in anti-de-Sitter, and this is, and I'm saying this because the domain wall from the point of view of the bulk is a codimension two object, this leads to the presence of Weyl curvature. Okay, so now. This is something that I think is not very well known, and the point is that what I want to say now is that codimension to objects or cosmic things, which I mean in this sense only, okay, which are pure relativistic objects made out of tension only, and which are half codimension to stress tensor like this. This not only produce the usual deficit angle, the usual conical space-time that everybody knows about, but they also, in some circumstances, they also produce Weyl curvature, which means tidal forces. And this is, I think, not really well known. Now, as I say, so locally, of course, I'm not going to deny that the codimension two forces produce a conical singularity, a deficit angle. But the point is that usually this leads people, or at least I thought, to think that this implied that the global structure of the spacetime at infinity also had a wedge removed, a deficit angle in a sense. Okay? So having a cosmic string will affect the asymptotic structure of the spacetime. But that's not true, okay? That's not true at all, at least in anti-de-Sitter. It's possible to have cosmic string solutions, okay? Or gravity solutions with a conical singularity that don't alter the asymptotic structure of the space, at least in anti-de-Sitter. And this is one explicit example. So let's consider again the same bulk five-dimensional space-time, this solidon. And so when I remove this integration constant, this is pure anti-de-Sitter in a slightly weird coordinates. And so there are two ways to introduce cosmic string or conical singularities in this metric. One way is trivial, this angle and this radial coordinate is what I am depicting here. Okay, this is the center of the radial coordinate, which is where F vanishes. And so one trivial way to put a cosmic string here is to impose that the range of theta is smaller than 2 pi. Okay, then, of course, you will have a conical singularity. But of course, the asymptotic structure also at infinity has this wedge removed. Okay. Now there is another way to put a cosmic string here, which is to set this mu not equal to zero, but insisting that the range of theta is the same as in anti-de-Sitter. Okay. Then, of course, by construction, I will have the same asymptotics as an antideceder because the only modification is this thing that decays at infinity. And, but then I won't be obeying the regularity condition that tells me that that at the center the solution is smooth. Okay, and as a result, the solution is something like this, something that is not smooth, but that's what I want, to have a radical singularity. And global antideceder boundary conditions. Okay, so there are many things to say about this. First of all, is that okay? Then, if I impose these global asymptotics, then as a consequence, one of the gravitational effects of cosmic strings, aside from generating that is dark angle here, is at a certain scale. That depends, of course, on the antideceder curvature. I will start to notice the presence of tidal vial curvature, and which means that there's going to be some tidal forces around here, and that's why I said before that this in this case a completely straight, okay, because this is a maximally symmetric cosmic string, produces tidal forces, and so it also produces a Newtonian potential, okay, and you can compute it, and the Newtonian potential translates into having a gravitational repulsion. Okay, so my claim is cosmic strings in antideceder are repulsive, generate tidal forces, and besides, the deficit angle that you have close to the object is completely screened away by precisely the vial curvature. Okay, at a certain distance, you trade the deficit angle by having some vial curvature.
That d squared, that's basically like 2+1 metric on the and in order to make those statements, does k have to be non-zero?
No.
So this is true for any value of k, you would say.
Yes.
And if it's any value of k, the nature of that singularity, is it always just a simple pinch or?
Yeah, the moment you want to resolve it, you
mm-hmm.
want to dress it with some smooth abelian Higgs whatever model.
But in the thin string limit.
No, in the thin
yes.
The limit, yes, it's a conical singularity. It's
nothing more. I'm
nothing
just
more.
Talking because of this k.
It's something that has this form.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly, nothing else than this form.
No, but I mean, a Weyl square tensor also.
Ah, yeah, okay, this is the next
okay.
Transparency.
All right.
So the other way to reinterpret this to is that the reason why this happens is that in antideceder gravity, there are these solutions, the smooth ones, the solitons, which actually can be viewed precisely as a cosmic string. As in the sense that they are a coordination to lump of vial curvature that is with the form of a tube, okay, is completely resolved, is smooth, but in proper coordinate it has some characteristic thickness of order, of course, of the antideceder radius. In conformal coordinate is also, I mean, this is a big object. But nevertheless, this is, I think, clearly a codimension to object. And by the way, it would be nice to see.
Can R go all the way to zero? No, right?
No.
So R goes to the size of the. So you have to resolve it. Okay, good.
Yes.
I understand. Good.
No. So R goes to wherever F vanishes. And if kappa is negative, for example,
sure.
This happens at some finite place.
Sure.
So, but these are.
You could have had a singularity had you not resolved something.
Excuse me?
you could have had a curvature singularity worse than the delta function.
No. This never gives you.
So you're saying this is purely solitonic for any intrinsic geometry?
Yeah, they are called adiasolitons, and this
never. But, you know, if you say hyperbolic adiasoliton, then to me that suggests that there is a specific slicing that you're using. You're saying?
Yes. No, but forget about the hyperbolic.
Okay.
I mean that the name adiasoliton is perfect.
Okay.
Because this is a vortex.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is a smooth vortex.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. And also, the tension can be positive or negative. And of course, they change. Whenever you have only the soliton alone, the global structure departs from pure global antidesiter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, but of course, putting a cosmic string, a real one, material one, plus some soliton, and choosing the right amount of vial curvature, I will always be able to cancel out the.
In a certain sense, it sits in the center of the ADS space.
Yes.
Without curving significantly the boundary, right? And I guess if you chose the k equals, I suppose plus one, then it would have intrinsic de Sitter geometry, right?
De Sitter, yeah. And these are the bubbles of nothing.
And then it had, right.
And this would be a bubble of nothing. Bubbles of nothing actually can also be thought of as.
Yes.
And,
yes, certain types of. Well, sort of time like wormhole.
Yeah.
Sort of like a solid.
Yeah. So, in any case, so this is morally the phenomenon dual to the fact that the mirrors generate produce particles. The fact that cosmic strings produce vial curvature. Okay, so I'm done. The main point is that, first of all, this particle creation by moving mirrors or domain walls is very illustrative toy model of these particle creation effects. And okay, gives you many things quite close to what you should get or think you have to get with the black holes, like these plasma walls in equilibrium with actual walls and so on. And aside from this, I didn't enter into this, but they also give a very non-trivial check of the cutoff ADS-CFT correspondence. And these are given by what I called bootstrap domain walls, which are solutions where, so you remember that the for critical or supercritical solutions had a horizon. So, of course, it could be that by taking into account the back reaction of the quantum effects, the horizon is actually replaced by a bounce in the work factor. Then you would have, you could have a self-consistent solution without a horizon and with a Casimir energy, and which means that with particle creation. And these solutions indeed exist, are present, and in certain conditions are under control in the effective theory. The curvature is everywhere smaller than the cutoff, and so. They should also exist some dual solutions in the 5D picture, and there are the analog solutions which don't differ much qualitatively. So, but the nice point about these solutions is that they are completely quantum solutions that wouldn't be there if you wouldn't be taking into account the back reaction. So this is precisely a test of this correspondence. So, okay, about the black holes, let me not say anymore. And one final thing having to do with the cosmic strings in anti-de Sitter is that, okay, so far then I could give you some explicit solutions where this with these co-dimension two objects, their gravitational effects. The deficit angle gets screened after a certain distance. This could be a more generic feature. I think, it happens for antidesiter. It does not happen for flat face, but it could be that it happens whenever you have some source, some homogeneous source, other than the cosmic string. And if this is true, this could be potentially interesting for cosmology. If there are any strings around, then the gravitational effects could actually be different. And this is something that hasn't been taken into account. It's difficult to compute again, but anyway. So I think I will stop there. Thank you.
Why isn't Hawking radiation the following thing? If I have an ADS CFT correspondence, the first thing is I want to make a black hole. Okay. So the way, if I try to make a black hole out of CFT stuff, I'm not sure if I know how to make a black hole out of this because CFTs are complicated. So I'll just make a black hole out of elementary particles. So I'll assume that I have some elementary particles. So in the 5D picture, that means particles that live on the UV brain. And so I just get them close enough with enough impact parameter, and I presume that in this 5D thing I just make this black hole that's sort of localized near the UV brain.
Mm-hmm.
So then what does it do? I presume it just starts falling towards the IR brain. It just gravitationally falls towards the IR brain, and that projected back on the UV brain is just going to be some spreading stuff.
Yeah.
So why isn't that just Hawking radiation?
Right, that's something, of course, it would be, but something that cannot happen in a Z2 symmetric model.
Why not? You mean Z2 about with Z2 about the Planck brain?
Yeah, because then it would be like the black hole splitting in two.
So?
And this is something that cannot happen, I think.
Yeah. I mean, one mirror of it goes this way, the other mirror of it goes that way. Why not?
What happens to the brain?
What?
You have a black hole and the brain is bisecting it.
It doesn't know which way to go?
No. How do you pull the brain out of a black hole?
No, there is some
pull the brain out. The black hole is just...
You have to leave... You have the black hole and you have to pull it away from the brain. How can you do that?
So you're saying that... So are you saying that it's going to stretch and become this long thing?
I would have said it naively like that, but we have even a smarter way to repeat the same thing, which is the area theorem.
Part of it has to stay, so there has to be a sort of a projection.
The
idea is it's going to become this long thing,
yes,
and then that long thing,
yes,
has to become...
It would really elongate, and then one would say, once it starts elongating and stretching and getting thinner and thinner and thinner, the thin ends, deeper in the IR,
yeah,
get thinned down so that the longitudinal cross-sectional area begins to get smaller than the area in the ADS units. And then, of course, it's Gregory Laplace sets in, and this thing starts fragmenting up. And so some kind of picture like that, presumably.
But even as it's
Yeah, there's one thing that could happen that I think in principle is not incompatible with this, which is that, but something like this pinching story that so that the brain reconnects with itself, okay. So this kind of process. And eventually, then you are left with. So this is the black hole. This.
That's really not Z2.
Yes.
Well, no. But why not? You just take your space to be this, and here I don't know really.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
No, but up to this point it is. Then I agree that this is a bit tough to visualize, but up to this point by construction. I just take two copies and so on, blah blah. This is not forbidden.
Well, that place where it reconnects, both sides of the line, the reconnection point is supposed to be the same.
So?
The Z2 says it's supposed to be.
Yeah, you will need.
Presumably, that connection point.
The brain somehow, so it's not really interesting looking.
I don't know, you will change the topology. Or
then you have some extra identifications there at that point where it presumably connects, or you, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know.
But you know, when you talked about you the bubble of nothing, can you draw a picture, you know, the Yorko dimension two looking like a bubble of nothing? Can you just catch the picture? So imagine you have ADS cylinder, right? So are you literally thinking of that as the hourglass?
The bubble of nothing,
In
asymptotically flat, but space.
In asymptotically flat ADS space, yes.
Flat or ADS? Flat.
ADS. Forget flat. I know flat. Flat is simple. The one that you wanted to talk about as the co-dimension to intrinsically the sitter.
Yes. Okay, let me start with the flat.
Please.
Because so the geometry,
yeah,
is
exactly
the analog of what I was drawing. That hyperboloid is here, this cigar, and so this goes together with this. Longitudinal directions, which in Penrose diagram form are sort of
It's like the sitter space and that's the flat space.
Some
exactly.
Without
absolutely.
This region.
Absolutely.
So
right.
this place is the same as this
right.
place.
Good.
And at infinity, what you have is whatever, Minkowski
sure.
3 cross S1. So you have compactified one direction. So this, you can interpret them as a supermassive cosmic string.
I think I see what you're saying, yes.
And if you draw a plot, the wild curvature is concentrated in here.
Right, no, I understand. What did you identify again? What was the identification? You said that point and that point. Which point and which point?
This.
Yes.
The.
Right.
The wall.
Yes.
The bubble wall
sure.
is the center.
Good.
In the two.
Good.
So that
absolutely.
this would be the core. So the
yes.
there is a region
yes.
where
no,
the file curvature is non-zero.
Yes. Right. And then you're saying in ADS space you just change the boundary into the ADS boundary in your.
Yeah. Domain. And then in ADS there is one, the small bubble of nothing. Is something like this, and there's also the large bubble of nothing.
Basically, literally trying to interpret the co-dimension two object. So you're basically strings living on the bottom of this thing.
Exactly.
All right. Okay. Cute. But you know, since it's surrounded by the horizon, I mean that does.
Horizon.
Yeah, because you know there is.
There is no horizon because this is the part that you removed. Okay, this you remove. So you're only left with this.
No, sorry. Right. I was thinking really of something, you know. Yeah. I think for ADS you do have this kind of thing, right? And yeah, you don't have a horizon.
You don't have a
horizon. But because that's interesting. Okay, good. No, that's interesting. The question is whether you have enough of the warping in the core. So that you still produce a light localized guy. I'm talking whether that can be a quote-unquote new brain world. The trouble is that normally, you know, so since from the point of view of your embedding picture with this sort of, you know, little curve at the bottom, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, since you're in global coordinates in ADS, your spectrum of any fluctuation is going to be discrete. the fluctuations which spread out of the little, you know, protuberance at the bottom, okay, so that they actually feel consistently the boundary conditions at you know, the boundary of ideas, they'll be gapped by the ideas radius. Okay. But then the question is, there will be in principle and possibly some states that are really localized in that little. They could be ultralight if they're incredibly strongly peaked to the brain that sits in there. You know, because Karch and Randall, in a certain sense, that's how they get it to be ultralight. It is very, very peaked to the brain, and then it's given some mass in order to actually get killed off on its, you know, as it goes off to the ADS boundary, because if it didn't, it wouldn't be normalized. But the reason that mass does not contribute a lot to the effective four-dimensional mass is because of the amplitude suppression. So maybe here you can get something like Karch-Randall. And clearly, since there is no horizon, there is no real 4D graviton. But maybe anyway, I mean, let's.
I have to think a bit more.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, this.
I didn't think about it in this context.
You know, this is going back to the discussion we've been having about co-dimension 2 brain world.
Okay.